So the Pharisees said to Jesus, what they are doing is against the law. In 1963, the Reverend Dr. Martin King found himself on the wrong side of a set of prison bars, sitting in a cell in Birmingham City Jail. An ally of his smuggled in a newspaper which contained a letter critical of him written by 8 white clergymen, including, sadly, 2 Methodist bishops. They criticized the method of his protest, and they urged him to be patient. That, I almost said, pissed him off so much, he began writing in the margins of that same newspaper what would become the famous letter from Birmingham Jail. Now, King states in that letter that citizens not only have a legal, but a moral responsibility to obey just laws, but also have a responsibility to disobey unjust laws. And quoting no less an authority than St. Augustine himself, King claims, an unjust law is no law at all. Laws are made to serve the cause of justice, and therefore they're made to serve the people. People are not made to serve the law. That's what Jesus keeps trying to tell the Pharisees. First, the Pharisees give him a hard time because his followers were walking through the fields, helping themselves to the grain. And the Pharisees don't accuse the disciples of stealing. They know that by law, hungry people have a right to a share of a farmer's crops. And that by law, farmers are required to leave the outside rows unharvested for that very purpose. Can you imagine? It would be like going to Fairway and finding some rows of fruit labeled, this is for you, if you're hungry, just help yourself. It's one of those ways that at least many of the biblical laws are more progressive than we think. But no, the Pharisees are critical of the timing of the gleaning, not the gleaning itself. Like those 8 white clergy people, they urge patience. You can eat tomorrow. No work today. No work on the Sabbath. And Jesus makes the important, although radical, point that the purpose of the Sabbath laws is to serve people, to guarantee them that once a week, no one can make them work. Once a week, they have a respite from toil, early labor law. That's what the Sabbath is for, not to entangle life, not to limit life, but to give life and restore life. Well, a little bit later, as you read, Jesus comes to the synagogue, and naturally comes to the synagogue because it's Shabbat, and a person is there in the synagogue who has a withered hand. And again, the Pharisees are there. It's like the Pharisees are following him around, trying to catch him doing things. Don't they have better things to do, these Pharisees? These Pharisees. Of course, as you probably know, not all Pharisees were Pharisaic. There were Pharisees and Pharisees, just as there are Christians and Christians. According to some scholars, Jesus himself was probably a Pharisee, probably considered himself a Pharisee. And one of the early great Pharisees was Hillel, who, when challenged to summarize the law while standing on one foot, said, "What is harmful, hurtful, and hateful to you, don't do to somebody else." That is the hall of the law. All the rest is commentary. Go and learn. It sounds a little like Jesus, doesn't it? But when they see Jesus and they see this person with a withered hand, these Pharisaic Pharisees watch to see what Jesus will do, to see what this line-crossing, boundary-busting, rule-breaking, troublemaking rabbi is going to do next. And once again, Jesus chooses the way of life. Chooses the way of life over following the letter of the law. He asks the person with the withered hand to stretch out that hand, and that hand is restored, made whole and useful again. And that makes those Pharisaic Pharisees mad. I was reminded of these stories of Jesus and the Pharisees a few times this past week. One time came the other day when I read that two people were denied ordination in the Baltimore-Washington Conference of the United Methodist Church because of their sexual orientation. This was curious because, like New York, Baltimore-Washington has been progressive about these things. And when I read the bishop's decision in denying ordination, I was very sad. Not because she herself is not supportive of LGBTQ people. She is. And she states that clearly. But she makes the decision because she's reluctant, despite that, to disobey the rules. Even though, as she states clearly, those rules are wrong. Those rules are unjust. Those rules should not be. Now, even I know that there are reasons for following rules. And there are consequences for not following rules. For the first time in a long time, I thought this week of one of the first people I met here at St. Paul and St. Andrew. Her name was Mabel Huber. And when I met her 30 years ago, she was already in her 80s. She was tiny and a bit cranky, like a lot cranky. Mabel had come to New York City from somewhere out west. We think it was Iowa. And she'd come here in the 1920s. She'd been working at a school out there when a teacher was accused of being a lesbian and was fired. Mabel stuck up for her. She filed a protest. This was in the 1920s. And Mabel was fired. And so she came to New York City and, of course, joined this church. Mabel had done what she felt was right, and she paid a price. You and I, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants, giants like Mabel Huber. We need to pay attention to our elders. Of course, the other time I thought of this week, was as our church began to figure out how to respond to a request to offer sanctuary to a family whose mom is threatened with deportation, a deportation that would split up this family. And we thought long and hard about that question. How far are we willing to go to do what's right? What risks are we willing to take for this immigrant family we don't even know in this poisonous, pestilent atmosphere? Because I personally believe that our current immigration policy is wrong and extremist and unchristian and even inhuman. That's what I believe. And Leviticus 19 backs me up. It says, "You shall not oppress the alien who lives in your land, but that alien shall be to you as a fellow citizen." How about that? "And love that alien as yourself." But, as is always the question, how far am I willing to go in my resistance? And are we actually able to care for such a family? Care for the life of this family, even if we're willing to take whatever risks there may be? These questions came naturally to the Board of Trustees. As the legal body of the church, they perhaps face a bigger risk, and by the nature of trustees, they are a cautious and responsible bunch. Even here, they raised a lot of questions. They raised good questions. They raised important questions. But it didn't take all that long for them to decide to be like Jesus, to decide to follow that line-crossing, boundary-busting, rule-breaking, troublemaking rabbi across the line. But they were clear, and I'm clear, and we're clear, that we can't do it without your help, should you choose to help, should you feel to be called to help. And so later in the service will be a time to think about that, for each person here to think about these questions, and to consider to what extremes you might be willing to go as you think about whether you might be called to join with us as we cross a line together for justice, as we cross a line together with Jesus. When I think about that question, that question of extremes. Another line from letter from Birmingham Jail comes to mind, and I'll leave you with this. King writes, "The question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists we will be. Will we be extremists for love and not extremists for hate?" Personally, I think that, like Martin King, Jesus is telling us, if we're extremists, be extremists for love. Be extremists for love.